A faded pink document from the late 1950s outlines all the steps necessary to qualify to vote. First, pay 3 years of poll taxes, plus any penalties and interest. That sum was $4.50, the equivalent of $37 today. Charlene Ligon remembers her mother talking about barriers like these.
It was a time in Virginia that when you went to register to vote, they gave you a blank piece of paper and you had to guess what you need to put on the registration form.
On that blank piece of paper, you needed to answer from memory about a dozen questions, including your occupation for the last 2 years and the state, county, and precinct where you voted in past elections.
There were all kinds of devices used to try to deny African Americans and poor whites. I mean, we kind of forget that. Basically poor people from having the opportunity to vote.
That's Rodney Jordan. His uncle, Joseph A. Jordan, teamed up with Charlene Ligon's mother, Evelyn T. Butts. The late Norfolk civil rights advocates fought segregation, discrimination, and voter disenfranchisement.
She had never been afraid to speak her mind, and she wasn't afraid that any of the tensions that might have gone on during those times.
Evelyn Butts was an entrepreneur, says Ligon, working as a seamstress to take care of the family after her husband was severely wounded in World War II. She was also a fierce advocate for equal rights and a talented organizer.
Well, my mom was a very strong activist. She began her interest in politics and in civic endeavors about 1954 after the passage of Brown versus Board of Education.
Joseph Jordan was also a veteran, paralyzed from the waist down during World War II. He spent 4 years recovering at McGuire Veterans Hospital, finished undergrad studies at Virginia Union University, then went to Brooklyn Law School. His law firm, Jordan, Dolly & Holt, fought civil rights cases across the South.
It's kind of hard to appreciate in 2016, but literally there were attorneys who were driven out of the state. There were families who faced terrorism as a result of their activism. I mean, Uncle Joseph shared with me himself that had it not been for his veterans pension and the salary that my Aunt Pat had, his wife, he probably would have been driven out of the state as well.
Jordan and Butts knew the ballot box was a path toward greater equality. Through a group called Virginia's Third Force, they helped thousands understand the poll tax and register to vote. Rodney Jordan says it was a way to comply with the law while simultaneously working to eliminate it.
The idea of Virginia's Third Force was you had, Republicans, you had Democrats, and then you had this large group of disenfranchised individuals who were not allowed to participate because of poll taxes and other devices. So he coined them as this third force.
Their grassroots campaign included a voter mobile that traveled the state and a lawsuit to open up Norfolk's voter rolls. After they won, Butts went down to the registrar's office, copied the voter info written on index cards, and used the data to prioritize registration efforts.
They would not give them what we take for granted now, to we could go get a voter file. Well, at that particular time, going back in that era, they weren't making the voter files public. So that's why they did that, because they wanted to know who the voters were so they could target the non-voters.
In 2016, where we have all this data and everyone is using technology and talking about social media and the ability to target voters by their voting history and where they live and what their preferences are, Mrs. Butts was doing that on index cards and with pen and paper and with a force of ladies supported by men, and that's how they were able to get people registered and organize communities and mobilize people.
By late 1965, the poll tax had been eliminated in federal elections, and the Voting Rights Act had expanded protections and prohibited discriminatory measures like literacy tests. But Virginia, Alabama, Mississippi, and Texas still maintained a poll tax in state and local elections. Vermont did too, for town meetings, town elections, and school district elections. During this time, Jordan and Butts challenged Virginia's poll tax in court. Their suits were dismissed, but they didn't give up. The case finally made it to the U.S. Supreme Court, consolidated with a similar suit, Harper v. Virginia State Board of Elections.
My mom, talks about that day. You know, that's really a great day for her to have been able to attend that session at the Supreme Court, to have met Thurgood Marshall, and also to have met Robert Kennedy, also, who was Attorney General, was in the courtroom that day also. So that was really great. She was really excited to have met all of those folks. And, of course, she was excited to be a part of history.
Number 48, Annie E. Harper et al. Appellants versus Virginia State Board of Elections et al. And number 655, Evelyn Butts, appellant versus Albertus Harrison, governor et al.
On January 25th and 26th, 1966, the U.S. Supreme Court heard oral arguments in the case. The late Allison Brown Jr. represented Fairfax's Annie E. Harper.
This court, in the case decided last term, Harmon v. Fresenius, commented on the well-known fact that the fact that disenfranchisement of the poor is occasioned by the failure to pay the tax. The tax not only disenfranchises persons without any means, but persons who are below the level of economic income where the question of paying a tax represents a choice between the necessities of life, food, clothing, shelter, medicine, and so forth.
Brown cited census numbers at the time that 28% of all Virginia families had incomes below $3,000 a year. Justices Stewart and Clark asked for clarification.
For a family, isn't it?
That's for a family income, yes, sir.
Did you say 28?
28% of all Virginia families. Yes, sir. It's in among white families, it's 22% who have incomes below $3,000.
And among non-white families, said Brown, 54% had incomes below $3,000.
Mr. Solicitor General.
Joining the appellant's lawyers in arguing the case was Thurgood Marshall. This was 14 years after he argued Brown versus Board of Education, and a year before he'd be appointed to the High Court.
The United States appears in this case because of the grave importance that our government attaches to the whole problem. And while the poll tax is today in full force, only in four states, Virginia, Alabama, Mississippi, and Texas, and secondly, by virtue of the 24th Amendment, applies only to state elections, it remains a serious clog in the exercise of the franchise. What is more, the problem of the poll tax as a real barrier to voting has become more, not less, acute. And the reason is that with the removal of most of the restrictions by the Voting Rights Act of 1965, it's pretty clear that the poll tax is going to be the one weapon left remaining. And then it will come into its full position, I assert.
You know, she was just proud to be there. You know, the Supreme Court is a huge symbol for democracy. So I am sure that she, it meant that, you know, her voice was heard, you know, and African-American voices were heard.
The level of tenacity and determination that they had, and I think the sense of patriotism. So we talk about patriotism in some ways. I don't think we talk about patriotism enough when it comes to ensuring that every citizen has the right to take full advantage of all of our country offers.
Now, whatever may be the practice in other states, it has been repeatedly found that in Virginia,
The poll tax is in fact administered without any racial discrimination.
Arguing for the state in support of the poll tax was George T. Gibson.
I believe it's as far as he did. Counsel below said at the hearing, and I quote, that the only issue was, quote, an economic hardship, unquote.
Justice Warren asked Gibson whether a person who paid the $1.50 poll tax but was delinquent on thousands of dollars of other taxes could still vote. After some back and forth, Mr. Gibson concedes the justice was correct.
Your Honor is quite correct. But it is quite true that the payment of all taxes is not required as a condition to voting in Virginia.
On the second day of arguments, Joseph A. Jordan addressed the bench. He called Gibson's arguments a corruption of the history that we know. He emphasized that before the reinstatement of the poll tax at the 1902 Constitutional Convention, many blacks held numerous state offices, including in the General Assembly.
Almost like a magic wand, after the passage of this law, these poll tax laws, not a single Negro has sat in the Virginia General Assembly, and not a single Negro has held a single elective state office in the state of Virginia. We say that the evil intent was accomplished, and that it was accomplished in direct confrontation to the 15th Amendment. We say that there is discrimination in Virginia which deprives Negroes of the right to vote, and we say that this is a direct violation of the 15th Amendment.
The Supreme Court delivered a decision in less than 2 months, ruling that a fee or tax in order to vote violated the 14th Amendment. In a Virginia pilot article from March 25, 1966, Evelyn Butts said she was sewing when she got the news. "I was very glad it was all over," she told the paper. "It will help the state of Virginia to progress." Joseph Jordan had a similar sentiment, saying, "It has given my state the way to get into the 20th century."
That was a great day because they had won the case and it proved the point that the poll tax actually kept poor people, and not only poor black people, poor white people from voting. So it kept a lot of people from participating in the process.
The sense of pride, the sense of euphoria, the sense of being a full citizen, even to this day, I think we still find ourselves struggling at times to feel like we belong. And so I just feel like the opportunity to participate in American democracy meant so much to them. And again, I think that's why you saw the voter registration swell and the voter participation rates swell, because they valued that vote and that franchise that had been denied for so long.
The end of the poll tax, combined with continued voter education efforts, led to some of the first African Americans elected to office since Reconstruction, including Joseph Jordan himself. He won a seat on Norfolk City Council in 1968 and later served as vice mayor. In 1977, he was appointed as a general district court judge.
William P. Robinson came into the House of Delegates in 1970, I believe it was. Doug Wilder, who was also someone who attended Virginia Union, as Uncle Joseph did, ended up in the Senate and later became governor. So the push of African Americans and women into elected office, I believe, can be traced right back to that elimination of that poll tax.
Evelyn Butts continued her community and political organizing and became the first black female commissioner of Norfolk's Redevelopment and Housing Authority. There, she fought for families to have safe and affordable housing.
One of the things that she stressed when they were starting to redevelop Oakwood and Rosemont, that she did not want it to be a housing project. She wanted to be a place where people could buy affordable housing. Home ownership was important to her, that people should own their homes instead of renting. So, yeah, that was really important to her.
I think they were, visionaries. Their creativity was unmatched, I believe. Just the ideas that they came up with, the fortitude that they had. And for Mrs. Butts and Uncle Joseph, they put their livelihoods at risk. And so to believe in a cause that much and to believe in justice to that extent, to really put your family and your personal well-being at stake, I just think speaks volumes. And if we can celebrate Patrick Henry, and we can celebrate Thomas Jefferson, and we can celebrate these others, and I think we should celebrate all those who have worked towards trying to make sure that this American ideal is realized.
There are no monuments recognizing Butts, Jordan, and others who fought to end Virginia's poll tax. But in Norfolk, the late Joseph A. Jordan has a public library named after him, and Evelyn T. Butts has an avenue.
And what's amazing is the end of the line for a lot of bus routes. So when you are in Norfolk and you see a city bus, it's not uncommon to see a bus with the name Evelyn T. Butts Avenue on it. So it does keep her name alive. And I've met some people and they say, oh boy, I've been to Norfolk and I noticed that name of Evelyn T. Butts Avenue, and I wondered, who was Evelyn T. Butts? So that's really, it's a great tribute to have had that done for her.
The legacy of Evelyn T. Butts also lives on through her daughter's work. Retired from the U.S. Air Force and living in Nebraska, Charlene Liggins organized voter registration campaigns, is chair of the Sarpy-Coney Democrats, and this year set up caucuses in 93 counties. She says if her mother were still alive today, she'd be in the streets too, getting out the vote. For Virginia Currents, this is Catherine Comp, WCVE News.